Hello, and welcome to Unmuted Unmastered. I'm Will, and this is the internet's most brutal music podcast. On the show this week, I'm joined by James.
Hello.
And Elle.
Hiya.
In this week's episode, we're going to be reviewing the new album by Mount Kimby. We've got the upcoming releases you need to know about, but first, the news. James, what have you got for us this week?
This week, I have a couple of stories to talk about. One is an update on something, which is Spotify, from the 1st of April, I think it was, have officially implemented the thing we talked about a couple of months ago, which was, well, they're demonetizing tracks under 1,000 streams, and that has gone ahead now. I mean, we've already discussed it a lot, so that's why I've got two stories here. But yeah, one thing to know is that United Musicians and Allied Workers have said that is 86% of the platform. So you can just imagine how much money Spotify are getting back from doing that. I mean, that's not exactly how Spotify framed it. They framed it as money they're getting back to give back to smaller artists. But that makes no sense because this hits directly at smaller artists. But yeah, we've already talked a lot about this. It's happened. I mean, yeah, it's a big company doing big company stuff. It's not a surprise, but it's just a shame.
Do you think if we start listening to predominantly tiny indie artists, we can claim money back from streaming services if they start to do this?
If we just build a load of robots.
If I like send Apple Music, if they take this up, an invoice of, well, I listen to these artists, so actually, if you take my £10 a month, I should only be paying about £2, because most of the artists have under 1,000 streams on the songs. So
it's like a tax rebate, but it's part of your Spotify Wrapped.
Yeah, and then that promotes people listening to more unusual, smaller artists. I think it's actually
bring us to Dragon's Den.
A great scheme.
Well, that would actually be quite interesting. But unfortunately, we have to pay this same rate for everyone else. Yeah, and we're paying the big artists. So that's fun. Speaking of big artists,
very nice.
Taylor Swift has made a swift return to TikTok.
Oof. You ruined it there, James. You had such a nice segue, and then you came out with that.
I thought I'd balance it out. So, yeah, another previous news story we talked about is that Universal Music had a bit of a falling out with TikTok, and they pulled their music from TikTok. So none of their artists that they distribute are on there anymore. However, until recently, that was the same for Taylor Swift songs, but Taylor Swift songs have suddenly returned, and all the TikToks, the videos that had Taylor Swift music muted are now unmuted. So they're back, and now you can choose Taylor Swift songs to put on your videos, whatever the kids do these days. Yeah, and there's been no like talk from Universal Music about this or TikTok. No one's mentioned it. An article from Variety has suggested that this might just be a deal between Taylor Swift and TikTok. Since she owns the masters of her music. So she might have been able to strike a deal. There's also the possibility that UMG and TikTok were like, well, it's Taylor Swift. We gotta have, and her album's coming out in a week. So maybe that's beneficial for both parties. So they agreed on something, but I'm not quite sure on that one. I think it's probably more to do with Taylor Swift's owning of her masters that's got her back on the platform. But yeah, I thought it was quite interesting. It's quite like sudden, and a mystery. I'm sure we'll find out what's really been happening soon. Maybe we won't. But good on you, Taylor Swift. I don't know.
Well, the thing is, if Universal have done this, then they're royally selling out their smaller artists to pull this deal. Because, I mean, the bargaining power they have is with their big artists staying off of TikTok while they haven't made a deal. It's not with kind of the you know, I imagine hundreds of kind of mid-size artists who could really do with it for promotion, but now can't use it because UMG are having this fight. If it's just that Taylor Swift's been able to, like, manage that herself, then I guess that's not quite so bad. But yeah, it... I can see either way them basically bending to a slightly more TikTok beneficial deal, given that Taylor Swift has a new album coming out, and then basically thinking, well, we need this album to do really well, so we're just going to cave and deal with it for now.
The thing that gets me is it's not like she needs that promotion. You know, she's Taylor Swift. Like, it's... I don't know how much her marketing plan for this new album is reliant on it being available on TikTok, but I don't know. I mean, the timing is convenient though. And I think it's strange on both sides that there's been no explanation given or a kind of understanding why it's only her music. I think there is something to be said about the ownership of her owning her masters, because that's like a hugely significant thing for her, so maybe there is that part of it. But it's just strange that there's been no announcement as to why this has happened. It's just happened.
Yeah, to be fair, it's only happened within the last day or two, so something might come out soon. But yeah, it's just strange. It's very sudden.
Yeah, hopefully some reporters start to dig into this, because I would be interested to hear what's actually gone on behind the scenes. But I think it will... obviously, her album's going to do well regardless. I mean, she's probably the most successful musician on the planet at the moment. So, yeah, I don't have any worries about it doing well. But I think to get that kind of deeper permeation of, like, the general public, I think she needs to be on the biggest platform. And I think she'll do, you know, it'll sell millions of copies regardless. But I think if she wants to get, you know, everyone listening to her, make it like a real, like, moment, or feel like a moment type album, I think she just kind of has to be there.
Yeah, I agree. She definitely doesn't need it. Well, yeah, I wouldn't say she needs it for the album to be successful, but I think if the opportunity is there, obviously there was the opportunity, and I don't think money for her was really anything. It could have been, you know, she could have paid off however much it wouldn't matter for her. So if the opportunity was there, she would do it. She prefers to have it up there rather than not have it up there.
Right, let's get on to our review for this week. We're looking at The Sunset Violent by Mount Kimby. It's the fourth studio album by the English band. Released on the 5th of April 2024 on Warp Records. It's the band's first album as a quartet, after they've added two extra members to the lineup permanently. The album's 9 tracks long and 36 minutes. What do we think of this album? Elle, do you want to kick us off?
I enjoyed this album a lot, and I didn't really quite know what to expect. I knew, like, a bit of Mount Kimby, but not like a huge amount. And from what I remember having listened to of theirs, this does feel slightly different. Not so far that I'm like, oh gosh, they've completely reinvented themselves or anything, but it feels, yeah, like they've kind of moved into a kind of new space. And I don't know how much of that is the addition of the two new kind of members, but I really enjoyed the whole record. There were a couple of tracks where I was perhaps like less enthused, and I kind of felt they didn't work quite as well, particularly when we go into it, I'll talk about them more, but there were moments where I felt that they just perhaps weren't fully realised as tracks, or the kind of vocal delivery just didn't quite work. Whereas on other tracks, I felt that it like tied really perfectly with the production and the instrumentation and everything. But overall, I did really like it. It's a kind of, it's definitely got that electronic vibe to it, but it's also got quite a lot of shoegaze running through it. There were bits that really did remind me of Slow Dive at points, and I liked that, and it had these kind of rock, indie rock elements that I always enjoy as a big fan of the genre. So those kind of things I liked. There, like lyrically, there wasn't loads I picked out as being like poetically beautiful or things that, you know, I'll remember forever because they were just so well written. But I did enjoy like the lyrics in terms of kind of the overall messaging throughout, and there were kind of repeated motifs, which I always like. Love a through line. It's there. That's always going to make me happy. So it was nice to have those bits. I think for me, the album is kind of bookended for me by its strongest tracks. The kind of, well, the opening, but also the second track, which I'm pretty sure was the lead single, and then the final track as well, were kind of like my favourites. I felt that they were like the strongest. And that's not to say like the middle falls apart at any point. I just felt like, oh yeah, those bits are really strong and are kind of really the kind of key parts of the album. Yeah, it's got a really interesting production to it. There's some really great moments. Again, it's that kind of electronic and kind of synth elements come through, and it's, you can tell that they know what they're doing with it, and they do it really well, and it's just really nice to listen to. And there are also just some nice guitar bits, some nice bass bits, you know, all those kind of things that they just do all of those things really well. And I just found it a really enjoyable album, kind of, I was going to say gentle, that's not the word I mean. I guess like slightly repetitive at times. And at times, like I said, there were a couple of tracks where I was like, oh, that's not really worked for me. But overall, I quite enjoyed it, that there's a kind of cyclical feel to the record, which I think really plays into their sound, and it works really well.
James, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree with most of what you said, Elle. I think the album is a really enjoyable one, fun to listen often, and yeah, it's just it has this nice, soft sound to it. I think on the first listen, I wasn't completely enamored by it. I think felt like the low energy of the vocals kind of let it down a bit, and low energy of the instrumentation as well at some points. But as I listened more to it, I kind of got used to it more and started to really enjoy it. But yeah, you have that vocal tone, which is, sometimes it is spoken word, but sometimes it's the vocals that are, they just don't, they're not like pumped up to the max. And I guess I probably would want that at some point throughout this album, but I get that if they don't want to do that. I think that the instrumentation does really well to fill in some of those gaps. Like I mentioned, that soft tone really shined through in a lot of those, in a lot of the tracks. I particularly like the bass tone in a lot of them. I'll highlight the tracks where that happens in a bit, but yeah, there's just some nice effects and nice tones on the bass and the synths as well, and the guitars. Lyrically, I thought it was good as well. I don't think there's any like themes that you haven't heard before, but they do it in their own way. They do deliver these things in their own way. I think it's delivered well. And I think the instrumentation does well to reflect what is being sung or what has been spoken. And finally, I think there are some really like catchy hooks in this. I say hooks, but like catchy riffs, catchy parts, which I don't expect them to be catchy, but like once you listen to the album again, you're like, oh, is this one? Yeah, I know this one. And some of the hooks, like, they're catchy, but I don't particularly love them, but they're catchy and you remember them, so it's kind of doing its job, which I don't mind too much. So yeah, it was an enjoyable album, but probably not something I'll remember forever.
Yeah, I enjoyed this album as well. It's very consistent and it sticks to like the vibe of the whole thing quite closely all throughout. And also it's quite a short record. I think, James, like you were saying, it's a bit of a grower, I find, where as I've listened to it more, I've gotten more into just the general sound and vibe of it. I think a lot's kind of been made online in the few bits I've read about it, of the kind of shoegaze and noise rock influences, which are obviously quite apparent. And L, I completely agree with you that I got Slow Dive from it more than any other shoegaze band, like just in the kind of more poppy type songwriting they're going for. And a lot of the tones as well is more Slow Dive than anyone else. But I mean, almost in the same amount that it reminds me of them, it also reminds me of bands like Metronomy and the XX and Gorillaz. Like, those types of kind of noughties, indie rock, kind of electronic rock type bands that were trying to do that crossover thing, I feel like it's drawing from them a lot in the way that it's doing. I mean, partly the style of kind of songwriting and how things are structured feels more like that maybe than it does like a shoegaze track in most of it, but also in the timbres of the synths and a lot of the drums as well, I feel like are going more in that direction. I think that's an interesting blend of things to pull together, and it's definitely two styles that I'm particularly fond of, so I enjoyed that. For me, it feels very much like a summer listen of something to kind of throw on and enjoy throughout, but I think the thing I felt was that just throughout it doesn't really go anywhere different or do anything particularly shocking, and I think that would be okay, except that I think that the songs also, like, they're good, but they're not huge. They don't feel like they've got like loads to them, if that makes sense. Like, they're very well put together, but just not taking that extra step, kind of like James, you were saying, like the hooks aren't exemplary and the lyrics aren't anything to really latch on to. So I feel like it just lacks that kind of like last step to make it really interesting in any given way. And I just didn't feel like the general sound of it, which I enjoyed, was enough to kind of get it there. So overall, it's an enjoyable album, but probably not one I'm going to listen to all that much, at least not like intently.
One track I want to highlight, particularly on my tonal point, is the second track, Dumb Guitar. This is where the softness really shines through, I guess. You have these like really soft keys to begin with, and then you have just like a calming instrumental. But the vocals are also very like calm, and then the tone of bass is like this phasey wobbly tone. It's very nice. And then also the backing vocals when they come in briefly, when they do the oh dumb like thing, it's like a really low vocal and it fits well, and then it just sounds really good. I enjoyed the little instrumental interlude-y thing with the harp. Well, it sounded like a harp to begin with, and then it did some like way too intricate stuff to be a harp anymore, so probably just a synth. But I just think it was a really lovely song, and it was a calming song as well, even though the lyrics were probably not too calming, but... it was a calm song.
Yeah, I agree. I also really liked this one, and it does give that kind of calming, I guess, like overtone to it. And then, when you kind of pick out some of the lyrics, you're like, oh God, that's that's not calm. And it kind of talks about, I guess, like a failing relationship. But it does it in, because the delivery is very, I guess, like deadpan. It's just quite an interesting way of kind of looking at that kind of, yeah, failing relationship. But with the, like, the tune almost sounds not like happy. That's going too far. But because it's calming, it's kind of gentle. It's like slightly, I guess, like more positive than the lyrics. Well, definitely than the lyrics are. And I like that a lot. I think that the combination of the vocal delivery and the instrumentation on this track is one of the best. And it's, yeah, like I said, one of my favorites from the album, and I think a really good choice for the lead single as well. And it's, yeah, shows what they can do really well. So it's got like this synth element coming in that I think is really nice, and the guitar, I think, yeah, like you said, well, this on this track in particular, it does remind me of kind of the XX style like guitar moments, or maybe even, I guess, someone like Crystal Castles maybe, or something like that. It's got that kind of vibe to it, which I personally just really enjoyed. And I think it's, yeah, not to say it's like kind of like pulling huge influence from those kind of things, but I think just as a track, it feels like one of the more complete tracks on the album. What I mean by that is that some of the tracks I'm like, oh, I feel like either it's they're shorter tracks and I feel like they didn't quite get to what I wanted them to get to, or they do feel kind of like the right length, but they're just not, like you said, James, well, like you both said, there's not a level they've reached where I'm like, wow, that's a great song. It's like, oh, that's a good song. But this one I think is one of the great ones, and it's, yeah, it's a really, if you're going to listen to one track from the album, start with this one.
Yeah, I'd agree. Although I feel like I took less of a calm vibe from it and more of like the kind of slow searing of a slow dive track, where it on the surface does have that kind of like slower tempo and the drums are kind of like going along, but I think that kind of helps it to build tension throughout, actually. And yeah, overall I thought this was one of the better tracks on the record as well. I love how in the verse all of the different parts fit together really nicely, and you've got quite a lot going on. You've got kind of synth keys, you've got a synth bass line that's got the filter moving on it, there's drums with percussion as well, and you've got both vocal parts, which I think play against each other really nicely. And then you go into the chorus and it switches into a more kind of straightforward, sparser arrangement with just the guitar, the vocals, the drums kind of going through. And I want to mention it now, but it kind of goes through all of the album. I love the distortion tones of the guitars on this one. I think a lot of the time they're pushed to the background a little bit, or they kind of slot together with other parts, so they'll blend it in with a synth or a bass part. But it just has this lovely, like, fuzzy and quite compressed tone to it, without ever sounding like becoming shrill or like sounding harsh in the mix. It's a very good balance, and it's impressive that they've managed to blend it into these songs that are generally do have that less intense feeling to them at first listen, but actually underneath there are some incredibly distorted guitars in there.
Yeah, and I think LU actually put it a bit better. It's more, I'd say it's more gentle than calming. It's gentle when it builds a little bit, but I'd say it's more gentle.
I also feel like the tracks where there were female vocals are probably the ones that I enjoyed the vocals on the most. And I think that's not because the other vocal parts aren't good. It's that they just don't cut through the mix in quite the same way. And in places that really works, I think. And particularly, I mean, like on Dumb Guitar, where it's playing off of the female vocal part, which is cutting through the mix, and then there's the male vocal kind of sitting underneath. But in other places where it's just the male vocals, it kind of gets washed away a little bit, and that's kind of the point, and they are going for that that shoegaze type sound to it, but I found it maybe a bit harder to latch on to the songs because of it.
I think Fishbrain is probably one to pick out on there. In terms of the female vocals, I just straight up said it's better with the more dynamic female vocals. I think the spoken words, like transitioning in and out of that through the singing, is done nicely and smoothly. But I just think when the female vocals, like you said, will cut through the mix, yeah, it's just really, it's really quite nice. Maybe that wouldn't work for every single song, but for this one, I think it does definitely work. You just feel more dynamic and makes the song more interesting. Yeah, and the guitar as well. It's a nice wah sound. And yeah, it's just a decent song.
Yeah, I think again, not to kind of criticize any of the male vocals, but I do think the album is stronger where those female vocals are given more of the spotlight or all of it. I did kind of want to mention on that the feature of King Cruel on the tracks, because so on the fourth track, Boxing, this was one of the tracks that I was less in, I enjoyed less, and I think part of it is that vocal delivery just doesn't quite work in the same way. I think also because you're kind of, you've heard tracks like Dumb Guitar and things like this, by this point you're kind of like, oh, okay, this is, I guess, it just doesn't sound as good. I don't know how else to phrase that. That sounds really harsh, but it's just not quite as good. And I was like, oh, is it just that vocal delivery just doesn't work? But I think it's within this track, it's just not done in a way that kind of works with the instrumentation and the production, things like that. Because then the final track, Empty and Silent, which also has King Cruel as a feature, I really, really liked, and it's one of my favourites on the album. And I think that's where it works really well. So I think it's quite an interesting look at how you can have like that same delivery, but it will work differently on different songs. And that's then a huge amount to be said about kind of the instrumentation and production around that and how it all comes together. But that final track I really liked, and it feels almost like if he's like reading just kind of like, I don't know, like about his day or something. He's just kind of talking about what's happening as though he's just kind of narrating what's going on, like a diary entry or something. And I think that works really well with his vocal style, and then how it then builds as a track. I think it works really nicely, and you do get that kind of female vocal come through on certain lines and things like that. And I think it's just a really well produced track. And it's also, I want to say it's the longest track on the record. Yeah, it is. But not in a sense that I kind of felt it. I was like, no, this feels like a really completed track. They kind of knew what they were setting out to do, and they've done it really well. Whereas other tracks, I was like, oh, this feels either too short, where I was like, I feel like you could have done more with it, or just a bit long, where I was like, I don't know why you've extended it to this point. But this one feels like, you know, Goldilocks just right. It's a great track.
Yeah, I agree about the two King Cruel tracks. About, yeah, the first one, Boxing, I think it works when his voice starts to get more strained, but it only comes through in like maybe one line towards the end of the song. And I think it's just an issue of mixing where, well, not even the mix, because I think by the time you get to the mix, like the problem's already like there, you can't fix it, because all of the kind of synth parts and the guitars are sitting in that middle frequency band, and that's where his vocals want to sit as well. So there's kind of no room for them all to be that prominent. Whereas on the final track, just all of the instrumentation is kind of more to the two ends of the frequency spectrum, where there are kind of, the drums are higher. They kind of remind me of Peter Bjorn and John, like that one song that we all know from them. So so it just leaves space for his voice to actually be heard over the rest of the song. And I think that's really the difference.
Yeah, totally agree with boxing. Like, it just feels like the instrumentation and the vocals are both not pulling their weight. Or maybe it is to do with the frequency thing where they're both pulling the weight in the middle. And there's just like, there's not other things surrounding them. It's just a bit repetitive as well. It's repetitive and it's just that one sound. But yeah, it definitely changes up for the last track. Yeah, it felt a bit different from other tracks. Felt spacey, got me moving a bit. And the lyrical component was really interesting. Like you said, kind of like a diary entry, I like that term. And I think it was good bookend to the album as well.
Two tracks I want to talk about are Shipwreck and Got Me. And it's because both of those, in slightly different ways, kind of made me think of Gorillaz. In Shipwreck, you get the style of the vocals, and it is a bit of that kind of slightly spoken word delivery, and that kind of made me, I don't know, it was just kind of a subconscious link when I was listening to it with Damon Albarn's voice. And also, I think there are other elements as well. You get that kind of staccato synth part that I think has that. I don't know exactly what it is, but Gorillaz just have a very unique sound to the way that they do their synths. And it just kind of had a bit of that feel to it. And also in the vocals, there's some kind of vocoder or vocal synth in the kind of more chorusy parts, which also to me kind of hints in that direction. And then the other one, Got Me, kind of has the energy of like a slower, more kind of experimental Gorillaz track, with kind of the pensive piano, and particularly the bass line I felt had that kind of feel to it. Neither of which I felt like were being like derivative or just trying to do Gorillaz, but it kind of hinted at that, which I enjoyed as a kind of point of reference, because I think they make sense as a band to be looking to if you're trying to do this kind of electronic rock crossover type thing.
I want to mention, yeah, it Got Me as well, because it is just like a small track where there's only like a couple of lines being repeated throughout the song, but it has that catchy hook, it has that synth, and it has that piano riff as well. And yeah, it's minimal, but I think it's succeeding in what it's trying to do. It's impactful, it's memorable, and it's just this little thing that just works. So yeah, I really enjoyed that, like, what, halfway through the album, just to change it up a little bit.
Yeah, I really liked Got Me. It felt to me, I think maybe partly because of the length as well, like just a little interlude. And I just think it works so nicely, especially, yeah, like you said, kind of its placement in the middle of the album there. And it's this one feels like gentle and calm as well. And it also, I want to say, like, pretty or almost like shimmery. It's just like a really lovely little track, and because yeah, it's not kind of focused on like that kind of really I guess like obvious delivery of lyrics or things like that. They're kind of there, but they're not really prominent. It's just a really nice kind of like peaceful break within the album. And it pulls in sounds that are on the rest of the tracks. It's not like come out of nowhere, but it's a lovely little moment within the album that I think shows how good they can be as a band, because they've, you know, got the ability to create these fantastic songs like Dumb Guitar or, you know, Empty and Silent, which are kind of obviously like longer, bigger tracks and there's more going on, or they've got these like little like snapshots that are also really well done and put together. And I think it speaks to their experience as artists and their kind of ability to craft different moments that still work cohesively on one record.
Right then, let's wrap up our review by ranking the album. The album rankings currently stand as at number 13, Sprints with Letter to Self. Number 12, Plastic Death by Glass Beach. Number 11 is Dancers, 10 Songs I Hate About You. Number 10 is Third Wind by Gulfer. Number 9, Chastity Belt with Live, Laugh, Love. Number 8, Office Dog with Spiel. Number 7, Vacations, No Place Like Home. Number 6 is Sheer Mags, Playing Favourites. Number 5, Souvenir by Omni. Number 4, Helado Negro with Phasor. Number 3, MGMT with Loss of Life. Number 2, Jalen with A Coma. And number 1, Katie Kirby with Blue Raspberry. Where would we like to put The Sunset Violent by Mount Kimby? I'm thinking somewhere below Spiel, but I'm not sure where. Probably above 10 Songs I Hate About You for me. So somewhere between those two.
Yeah, I was going to say probably number 10. So between Chastity Belt and Gulfer.
I think Gulfer's got better moments. But this album's more consistent.
Yeah. I think I like this one more as kind of like an album, like as one whole piece. But yeah, I do agree. Gulfer has, I think, more individual tracks that I will come back to more throughout the year.
Yeah. Last week, Chastity Belt was like kind of inconsistent, but it had those great moments. I think this one is consistent, but it doesn't. I mean, there's bits that stand out, but it is kind of on one level mostly. So I think those two kind of balance each other out. But maybe I'd put it above the Chastity Belt, maybe just about.
I'm going to say just below Chastity Belt, so it goes in at number 10. Okay, upcoming releases this week. What's coming out that you need to know about? First off, new Taylor Swift album. It's called The Tortured Poets Department. Quite the melodramatic title, but it's Taylor Swift. Is it a general trend that pop stars aren't releasing singles these days? I saw, who was it? Is it Olivia Rodrigo who's not releasing any singles in the lead up to her, or maybe Billie Eilish?
Olivia Rodrigo did release singles because her album came out recently, and I definitely remember listening to singles before. Hand.
It was Billie Eilish. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I say that, but Dua Lipa's got singles out now, and she's obviously a huge star. Maybe not quite, obviously not on Taylor Swift's level, but I mean, pretty up there. I guess it's just the two of them, really, but something ticked in my brain there. You excited, Elle?
I'm buzzed. Oh my God, I'm so ready. Also, it's called The Tortured Poets Department. That's so me. That's so melodramatic. And for what? You know? I love it already.
Are you worried about the parallels possibly to the Nationals' recent output of their first two pages of Frankenstein, which was, in my opinion, just painfully okay?
I wasn't concerned, but now maybe I am. Now you've put that thought in my head. But, I mean, come Friday, we shall see. I'll report back.
Next up, Pillow Queens are releasing their third album. It's called Name Your Sorrow. Singles seem like they're doing something a little bit different this time, which I think is good. Their last album felt like their first one, but bigger. And I felt like it kind of maybe lost something in the process. So I'm hoping for good one this time. Next up, Local Natives, the American kind of pop rock band, are releasing a new album. It's called But I'll Wait For You. Another American band, Cloud Nothings, are releasing a new album called Final Summer. And finally, if you want some ambient music, Claire Rousey, I want to say that's how you pronounce it, Rousay, is releasing a new album called Sentiment. I've really enjoyed some of her previous stuff, so if you're into ambient, I'd definitely put that one on your radar. Oh, I have an extra bit to do. I went to see a musical.
Oh, hello.
I love a musical. New segment alert.
I saw Hadestown at the Lyric in London. which...
Stop it, I'm so jealous.
If you don't know, it's a musical written by Anais Mitchell, who you might have heard from the band Bonnie Light Horseman, who we reviewed an album of in a previous year. She wrote this musical in like 2008 or something, like ages and ages ago, and then it was done as like a smaller production in like the early 2010s. She did a concept album, which if you can't get to the show, I would recommend listening to the concept album first, because it's got her playing, I forget all of the characters' names, Eurydice. She plays Eurydice, and then Orpheus is played by Justin Vernon of Bon Iver. And then they've got a solid group of musicians around them to play the other parts. And it's very good. So yeah, the musical's basically just a retelling of their story from Greek myth. I thought it was very good. I enjoyed the cast a lot. I thought the woman who played Eurydice and the woman who played Hermes were both really, really good. The guy who played Hades had an incredibly deep voice, which was very fitting for the part. And generally, the music was really well done. And I am not a musicals guy because I find the music mostly insufferable. but in this case, they're written more as folk songs, which naturally have this kind of storytelling feel to them. So them adding kind of the beats of the story in don't feel forced and contrived in a way that they do in almost every other musical I've heard anything from. So yeah, I'd really recommend it. I don't know if it'll still be playing at the Lyric at this point, but if you ever get a chance to go see Hades Town, it's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, I'm not a musical guy, but I'm just having a brief look at it. It does look interesting, so might check that out.
I've been really wanting to see it, so I'm very envious. I love the concept album. I also dislike that you've slated musicals as a genre there, as a diehard musicals fan, but I'll let it go.
Also, somewhat, what's the word? Coincidentally, Bonnie Light Horseman announced their new album just after I'd been to see Hades Town. And it sounds very interesting. They recorded it in a pub in Ireland, apparently, while the pub was in use, I guess. which is interesting. It's a double record as well. So yeah, that's definitely one I'll be interested in later in the year.
Very fun.
That's my segment.
Another great segment.
What musical are you listening or watching in the upcoming week to talk about next week?
What can I watch?
You know what? People say La La Land is really good, but I still haven't watched it.
It is good, actually. That's another one I enjoyed.
Oh, it's good, actually.
We've got to get on that.
It's good. It's emotionally devastating.
Okay, there we go.
And aesthetically, it's lovely.
I mean, it's got Ryan Gosling in it. Of course it is.
It's got Ryan Gosling.
That's it for upcoming releases, and that's it for the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you, James and Elle, for joining me.
Yes.
Thank you.
If you like the show, new episodes come out every Monday, but if you're likely to forget, you can subscribe on your podcast service of choice and consider turning on notifications to be reminded. If you want to get in touch with us, you can drop us an email at amutedunmastered@gmail.com. I can now announce that the album for next week is the self-titled album by Bad Bad Hats.